Good evening and welcome to The Forum. Tonight we bring you highlights from the annual meeting of Peaceworks KC. This recording on Sunday, March 11th at the Simpson House in Kansas City, Missouri. The first voice you'll hear will be of Sonny Hamrick, who acted as MC for the afternoon's proceedings.
We're going to call up Ann Solonchop to talk about ICANN, the recent recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize, and the Doomsday Clock. Let's give it up for Ann.
It is now 2 minutes to midnight, or to use the words of another social movement, time's up. This is the Doomsday Clock, founded in 1945 by the University of Chicago scientists who helped develop the first atomic weapons in the Manhattan Project. The Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists created the Doomsday Clock 2 years later, using the imagery of apocalypse, midnight, and the contemporary idiom of nuclear explosion, countdown to zero, to convey threats to humanity and the planet. The decision or to move or leave in place the minute hand of the Doomsday Clock is made every year by the Bulletin's Science and Security Board in consultation with its board of sponsors, which includes 15 Nobel laureates. The clock has become a universally recognized indicator of the world's vulnerability to catastrophe from nuclear weapons, climate change, and new technologies emerging. The clock is as close now as it ever was during the height of the Cold War during the 50s. Nuclear weapons threaten the very survival of humanity and our entire living planet. What hope is there in these dire circumstances? We are that hope, believe it or not, us regular folks. Did you know that we all just won the Nobel Peace Prize, This past December 10th, Beatrice Finn and Hiroshima bomb survivor Setsuko Thurlow accepted the Peace Prize in Norway on behalf of ICANN, the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons. And that's their website showing right there on the wall. It is a worldwide network of hundreds of organizations, including some that I belong to, Physicians for Social Responsibility, the Alliance for Nuclear Accountability, and Peaceworks. I got most of my talking points today off of those internet sites of those organizations. On July 7th, 2017, following a decade of advocacy by ICANN and its partners, an overwhelming majority of nations, 122, voted to adopt an historic global agreement to ban nuclear weapons.
And
this treaty is officially known as the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons. We always knew that nuclear weapons were immoral and illegitimate, but now, at long last, they are illegal. The new treaty is permanent in nature and will enter into legal force over once 50 nations have formally ratified it, which is in process now. So there are many things that a person can do locally and at the national level to keep pushing for this banned treaty. And I invite you to consider getting involved in some of the following events and issues, and I'll go through five of them briefly. There's an effort to bring a resolution in support of the Nuclear Ban Weapons Treaty to the Kansas City, Missouri City Council, and we're thinking Kansas also. And so that's what the sign-up sheets are that are circling around. Nuclear weapons are already poisoning this and future generations right here in Kansas City and in St. Louis. A new group formed last summer called the Coalition Against Contamination. They are dealing with the demolition of the old nuclear bomb parts plant at the Bannister Federal Complex, which used over 2,400 toxic chemicals since it started in World War II. There are many sick and dying former workers from the plant who want to start alerting the surrounding community, the surrounding neighborhood, to the massive and permanent pollution there. And a person that is a whistleblower from the plant, Maurice Copeland, has stepped forward to run against Representative Cleaver. And he is going to bring these issues into the public debate. St. Louis area was the site of the first uranium processing during the Manhattan Project that made the Nagasaki bomb. The radioactive waste there were illegally dumped and have caused numerous thousands, probably, of cancers, other illnesses without the public even being aware of it until recently. And there's one particular site, the Westlake Landfill. It has an underground dump fire approaching the radioactive dump area. And this is the worst eco disaster in America, according to both Aaron Brockovich and Lewis Gibbs. And Lewis started the Superfund program with Jimmy Carter behind the Love Canal problem. So the EPA has recently proposed removing only about a quarter of the radioactive waste, covering the rest of it with a concrete cap. And we all know concrete doesn't last forever. And they're not going to buy out the families that live like a mile away, very close to the dump. So the St. Louis groups are asking for our help in sending our comments to the EPA. The public comment period will run through April 23rd, and online comments can be submitted. Just go to the EPA website and look up Westlake Landfill public comment period. And the third thing is, that's EPA website, epa.gov. Slash Missouri, and then look up Westlake Landfill public comment period. And the third thing is the Alliance for Nuclear Accountability will have its 30th DC days the week of May 20th in Washington, DC. ANA is a network of over 30 national organizations around nuclear weapons manufacturing and waste sites. They have helped stop many stupid, bad nuclear weapons ideas over the past decades. So I'll be attending for my 10th year, and if anyone is interested in going with me, see me afterwards. There are youth scholarships available for those 18 to 30 years old. It's a great opportunity to learn about all nuclear issues from activists who have decades of experience in this area. There's many issues to discuss with lawmakers on Capitol Hill, including Trump's atrocious nuclear posture review that calls for smaller, usable nukes, increasing spending past $1.2 trillion up to possibly $2 trillion over the next 30 years. Mm. And then the fourth thing, Jim Hanna is going to be talking about later, the Poor People's Campaign to End War, Racism, Poverty, and the Climate Crisis. We're organizing 40 days of protests this spring. There's groups in Kansas and Missouri who'll be rallying locally and at the capitals. Fifth thing, I will be giving two talks this spring with more info on nuclear weapons and how to get involved. The first is a short talk on a panel of the Greater Kansas City Justice Coalition Tuesday, March 20th. From 4:30 to 6 at KCMO Health Department at 22nd and Truce. And the second one is a longer talk just by myself only, Thursday, April 19th at Precious Blood Renewal Center in Liberty. And there's a meal included with that, and it's from 6 to 8:30 roughly. And it's in your little pamphlet on coming events, the address and everything. I also hope to do a speaking tour in Germany this summer on U.S. nuclear weapons, and Germany has 20 U.S. nuclear weapons that German pilots would carry in German jets. They're called Tornadoes, and if NATO would ask them to. And Germany needs to reject NATO nuclear sharing and demand all nuclear weapons are removed and sign the ban treaty. So when you get right down to it, the basic element or core of a thermonuclear weapon is plutonium. Plutonium is one of the most deadly substances on Earth, and it was never on the Earth's surface until 1945. We made it. Although a couple millionths of a gram in your lung is enough to give you lung cancer, we have produced hundreds of tons, and we don't know what to do with it. For a few decades of electricity and the security of our nuclear doomsday machines, we are collectively saying to all future human beings who will ever live on this planet, here, we bequeath you 1,830 tons of a super deadly poison. By the way, be sure to keep it out of your air, water, and soil for the next 200,000 years. Good luck. Nothing whatsoever can justify this ongoing, interminable crime against our descendants. Many Native peoples wisely made policies holding before themselves a question: how will decisions today affect the next 7 generations? Today, the world is interconnected as never before. It is not only connected presently, but decisions made today will have permanent consequences long into the future. If our decisions today are flawed, we cannot say how long the future will even last. This is unique in human history. We are the first generation which must ensure consciously and intentionally that we are not the last. The lesson of the last century is that we cannot find security by attempting to dominate each other, nor by trying to dominate nature. It will take creativity and the energies of many groups to discuss the issues and take action. Youth groups, environmental groups, racial justice groups, and peace groups, etc., etc. Let's get together and smash the clock forever.
Thank you, Anne. I always describe Anne as our nuclear weapons specialist. I think she's just so incredibly informed on the nuclear weapons, and a lot of that comes from her interactions with Alliance for Nuclear Accountability and all the research she does. So let's give another round of applause for all the great work Anne does. I'm going to go ahead and bring up Jim Hanna to bring to us Renewing the Dream. Let's give a round of applause for Jim Hanna.
When I was a kid, I had a hero. I also had a holster with two silver guns and silver bullets and all that sort of thing. I don't know how many remember this, like, hi-yo, silver away! Taco, evil sabay, all that sort of thing. So, who was that masked man, anyway? Return with us now to the thrilling years, days of yesteryear. It took me a long time to figure out that this, all these westerns that I watched, and at the time I watched The Gunsmoke, and I watched Bonanza, and I watched Have Gun Will Travel, Paladin, you know, all that sort of thing. It took me a while to realize that all those accounts or narratives were really about the myth of redemptive violence. Walter Wink coined that term. Basically, it means a belief that violence saves, a belief in peace through war, a belief in security through strength. For the true believers of that myth, unquestioning obedience is the highest value and order the highest religious virtue. It's the dominant need, theme of contemporary America, Wink says. A de facto religion more influential than Christianity, Islam, and Judaism combined. And it enshrines the ritual practice of violence at the very heart of our public life. Eventually, I began to see this myth for what it was. The Vietnam War opened my eyes to the systemic violence and militarism of our society. Then came the civil rights movements with its revelations about racism and economic oppression. A new kind of hero then came on the scene. One who affirmed that love is stronger than hate, that nonviolence is more powerful than force. This was no Lone Ranger. This was a community organizer. It's difficult to overstate the prophetic contribution of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. to my life and to the life of this nation. 50 years ago, he saw clearly the evils that confront us today still, a triad of evils. We must see now, he said, that the evils of racism, economic exploitation, and militarism are all tied together. You can't really get rid of one without getting rid of the others. The whole structure of American life must be changed. This vision of a fundamentally restructured America was the picture that he painted in his iconic I Have a Dream address on the Washington Mall. And this vision of a fundamentally restructured America was what took him to Memphis and to his death in solidarity with garbage collectors. And this vision of a fundamentally restructured America was what he planned for a Poor People's March on Washington, D.C. but never saw realized. But you know, dreamers and their dreams don't really die as long as someone picks up the torch. Like our forebears, we are challenged to always keep striving for a more perfect union. Doesn't mean we're perfect now. We're striving for a more perfect union, as President Lincoln said so well. To embark on that long journey of justice, we must see clearly and face honestly our shortcomings. I want to channel just a few words from Mary Latke, who was not able to be here today, when she talked about these three pillars. Militarism, she writes, is a mindset of domination and control to remake the world as we see fit. It's treated as one of the true religions of the United States. Racism, she said, and she talked about the new Jim Crow. There's a war on the people of color who are overrepresented in the prison system. Mass incarceration disposes of and makes invisible a growing underclass. And then she went on to talk about how racism is also evident in the way we're dealing with refugees and immigrants. She talked about, finally, economic oppression, talking about the fact that 40 million of Americans are in poverty. Some of them have about half that number in deep poverty. So she writes, when you're told there's no money to take care of the basic needs here at home, don't believe it. A choice has been made by our elected representatives, ignoring the needs of Americans to do the bidding of the military-industrial complex. We need to confront the war industry and the politicians who serve it. As I think about all that, I just think, wow. How sad, first of all, that Dr. King's diagnosis of our society's ills back in 1967 is still current in 2018. But how hopeful that his prescription has not become outdated in those 50 years. The Poor People's Campaign being resurrected here and across the nation is a remarkable rebirth of Dr. King's dream, being expanded now to also include care for the environment and recognition that the U.S. military is the largest single users of oil and one of the world's worst contributors to global warming. I hope each of us will see each other on March 24th at the Poor People's Campaign March. When I retired, I sometimes told people that I kind of slept through the 1960s. But now that I'm in my 60s, I hope to wake up. I really thank Peaceworks Kansas City and many of you here in this room today for that process in my life. I'm still awakening. But the awareness of this is an alternative to despair, which is what I've often felt, especially in the last several years. There is an alternative to despair, and that is together, as we are doing today, encourage and support and uphold one another for a very difficult task. To me now, you are my real life heroes. You know, I don't have the same heroes that I did then. One of my most cherished memories is being in a paddy wagon on a hot summer day, with sweat pouring down my face and into my eyes and really burning, and being thrust like this, and having my compatriot Henry reach across the paddy wagon with his stocking foot. I can't even do it. And wipe the sweat out of my eyes. And to me, that was what I would call, for me, a sacramental moment. It really was. And I've had other moments like that. I could call so many names of so many of you, and I won't even start on that process because it's so personal. But I'm truly thankful. I want to just close by saying a few words about the Lone Ranger's silver bullets. On the television show, the Lone Ranger explained that he uses silver bullets as a symbol of justice. But also, he said, I use the silver bullet because it's a reminder of how very heavy a price is carried as you carry a gun. One of the beauties of Peaceworks and for peacemakers all together is that we recognize how heavy that price is, and we have put away our guns. And we have attempted to disarm not only our arms, but also our hearts. Mm-hmm. Disarming our hearts. So I would also remind us that there are no silver bullets. There are no simple guaranteed solutions to difficult problems. We need to remember that the civil rights movement wasn't an overnight success, but a 20-year slog. It took a lot of recruitment, a lot of training, a lot of organizing, a lot of adapting, a lot of redos, I'm sure.
A lot of debt.
Poor People's Campaign will surely be no different than that. But I take heart in our name. Peace works. To me, that has a double meaning. First of all, it says that peace requires work. It's not something that's just simply going to happen. But the second meaning is that peace actually works. It's a real alternative to the futility of violence and war. It really works. We need to be in this Peaceworks journey for the long haul, seeing it not as a sprint, but as a cross-country marathon, complete with obstacles. Let's run the race with patience, encouraging each other, upholding one another in times of discouragement. And let us be ever mindful of the words of Dr. King. Hope, he said, is the final refusal to give up. The final refusal to give up. Amen.
Thanks so much for that, Jim, and sharing the stories and the reflections. Henry saving you there on that day. I don't know what the missus would think about that being your fondest memory, but no, that's great. Yeah, that's the kind of attorney you want on your side.
Oh, we're getting locked up to your attorney. That's a little questionable.
Sir, would you like to call your attorney? No need to. He's right here, actually. Yeah, that's great. Thank you so much, and thanks for speaking to the beautiful community that fills this room to this day right now. Thank you so much all for being here. That was a perfect intro by Jim into the introduction of the Poor People's Campaign and the local workers' movement here in Kansas City. We're going to bring up our special guest speaker for the day, Mike Enriquez, who helps organize the low-wage workers with Stand Up KC and as well also doing a lot of the organizing for the new revival of the Poor People's Campaign. And I know that he's here with a couple of his other organizers, so we'll let him introduce them and give a little bit about what this is all about. Round of applause for Mike Enriquez, everybody. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Make sure you all are awake. There's some more coffee in there. Good afternoon. I am Mike Enriquez. I just want to say congratulations to Peaceworks and the 36 years that you all have had as an organization. It's nice to be in a room with so many people who deeply understand what Dr. King meant when he said that social change doesn't roll in on the wheels of inevitability, but comes through ceaseless struggle and sacrifice. I think you all should clap for yourselves and give yourselves a round of applause. Because that's taking the long view, I think, is what is needed now more than ever to breathe life into the new Poor People's Campaign. So I'm the executive director of Stand Up KC, which is the local arm of the Fight for 15 and a union movement of low-wage workers, fast food workers who have been organizing, fighting, striking, committing civil disobedience for 15 and a union for 5 years now. And we have joined the new Poor People's Campaign. We are going to do a couple things today, talk a little bit about the coming together of our movement, which I think is the foremost movement of workers fighting for racial and economic equality that's now joined forces with the foremost moral movement in the country. We came together on February 12th. So by way of introducing Brian, I just want to say a little something about the roots of the Poor People's Campaign and the connection with the Fight for 15 and a Union movement. I think as Jim had said earlier, where does Dr. King die on April 4th in 1968? Where is he taken from us? In Memphis, standing on the strike lines with sanitation workers who are fighting for a union and an end to racism and a living wage. That is the historical lineage that this movement, the Fight for 15 movement, comes from. And we have long said, even before the New Poor People's Campaign was launched, that fast food workers are the 21st century sanitation workers. Because we know that we've got 64 million workers who are in this country working for less than $15 an hour. If the fast food workers, who are 4 million of those 64 million, win a union, we can transform this country. And we know that the fight for the Poor People's Campaign, as you said, Dr. King was fighting for in the Poor People's Campaign, the whole movement was to build a multiracial movement to end the triple evils of racism, economic exploitation, and militarism. And then, as you've seen on the video, what's been added is environmental degradation. So as if we could invite Brian up really quickly, I know he's got to head out to work. I just would say Brian is a 32-year-old fast food worker at McDonald's. He has been working in fast food at low wages his whole life. He's a perfect representation of how broken this economy is. The average age in fast food, according to the U.S. Census, is 32 years old. Think about that for a moment. And the three largest employers in this country are Walmart, McDonald's, and Yum Brands, which owns Kentucky Fried Chicken, Taco Bell, and Pizza Hut. That's the perfect, they all pay poverty wages and no benefits, have rampant racial discrimination and gender discrimination. It's the perfect window into how broken this economy is. And Brian and other workers who have been leading the Fight for 15 in a union movement have the force in the Poor People's Campaign to transform that economy. And we're going to have Brian tell us his story, but also on February 12th, the Poor People's Campaign and the Fight for 15 came together officially. We had actions across the whole country, and Brian is going to read the remarks that he gave on the 12th, which I think will give you all additional insight into these two movements coming together. So, Brian.
And thank you, everybody, for giving me the chance to speak today. We have to remember how working people get our power. 50 years ago, speaking to those Memphis sanitation workers on strike, Dr. King said, "We can all get more together than we can apart. We can get more when we organize together than we can apart." And this is the way we gain power. Power is the ability to achieve purpose. Power is the ability to affect change. And we need power. Walter Reuther once said that power is the ability of a labor union like the UAW to make the most powerful corporation in the world, General Motors, say yes when they want to say no. That's power. Mm-hmm. Our power is stronger when we are together, when we organize, mm-hmm. when we unite. Black, white, and brown workers, we have the power to make the most powerful corporation in the world today, McDonald's, say yes when they want to say no. Now, we cannot allow ourselves to fall victim to bigotry, racism, sexism, homophobia, or any other attempts to divide us. Because racism hurts black and brown workers, but it also hurts white workers. Because an injury to one is an injury to all, and nobody is free until we're all free. When we overcome our divisions, when we use our strength in numbers to win things together that we cannot win on our own, that's called a union. And there are a lot of things that low-wage workers need. My low pay means things like not having access to health care. My low pay means not always being able to keep food in my fridge. My low pay means I haven't turned the heat on in my apartment for 6 years. And my low pay means that every morning I wake up one heartbeat away from total financial disaster. Workers like me have been without these things for too long. But when all workers come together, black, white and brown workers, gay and straight, men and women, native-born and immigrant workers, nothing can stop our power to win better for all of us. 50 years ago, Dr. King stood on the strike lines in Memphis because he knew workers needed unions to ensure that all workers had equal treatment, dignity, and respect on the job. That was as true then as it is now. Today, our movements are ready to do whatever it takes to win a union so that all Americans, not just the wealthy and powerful, have a shot at a decent life. We're all here today because we remember the leaders that came before us. But we're also marching toward our own future, a future where working people come together to fight for what we all need and deserve. And I can't do it alone. Fast food workers can't do it alone. But together, we will make companies like McDonald's say yes when they want to say no.
So I want to be conscious of time. I just want to say quickly, as we think about the Poor People's Campaign and was said earlier, we are building towards 6 weeks of civil disobedience all across the country, a season of nonviolent direct action targeting the state capitals. There's a capital in Jefferson City that has across the top of its motto, "Let the welfare of the people be the supreme law." There are legislators who couldn't do anything more than the opposite of what they're doing today to breathe life into that motto. So across the country, we're going to be targeting state capitals, and I'm going to ask folks to sign up here to the Poor People's Campaign pledge card. If you are interested in civil disobedience, we'll have trainings. Obviously, people here have been doing civil disobedience before I was alive, so you all know something about civil disobedience. But we'll be training, we'll be working with our attorneys. And then secondly, even if you're not interested in civil disobedience, please sign up so you can be made aware of events and actions that are coming up. And the event and action that is coming up is, most importantly, on the 24th, we are having the Poor People's Campaign Faith Assembly. And everybody should have these on your table, by the way, the cards. So please sign those. We'll pick them up. I want to invite everyone to the Poor People's Campaign Faith Assembly. You saw Reverend William Barber, who is one of the co-chairs. We are bringing in Reverend Liz Theo Harris, who is a co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign. She's coming to town, along with Reverend Jimmy Hawkins, who is the Presbyterian Church USA Director of the Office of Public Witness. And Reverend Eric Garbison here has been central in bringing Reverend Jimmy Hawkins, but also in lending leadership to this event and the Poor People's Campaign more generally. So I want to thank Reverend Eric Garbison. And being a state of prison for years as well, going to jail with us too. So please come out on the 24th. There is a link to RSVP. I think Brian said it very well. We all get more together than we do apart. We all know that here. And we have got to continue to breathe life, not only into that state motto, but the vision of Dr. King and the Poor People's Campaign to eliminate the triple evils of racism, economic exploitation, militarism, and we are adding environmental degradation. We'll see you all in the streets. Thank you.
Let's give it up another time just for Brian and Mike for sharing their story. Thank you so much. And those are what really call our hearts to action. So thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you so much for participating.
Thanks, Lauren. We'll clap it up for Tamara, too. She was really great. Awesome. Well, it's my pleasure to call up, and speaking of so many people that do such great work in different communities as well as our own, I'm going to bring up Joseph Wan to come on up and announce our Chris and Lynn Cheatham Community Peace Award. Let's give a round of applause for Joseph.
All right, great. Begin with and end with, it's all personal. It's all personal. Again, today, we're going to start by a kind of roundabout way, and we'll get to the who and the what of this lovely plaque to give to those whom we're recognizing, as well as charging with continued action. War, in its fullest dimension, is a belief in the abiding moral power of death, that the power to kill is the power to rule, and that is what defines and gives goodness and circumscribes those from without. The works of war destroy crops and land, seize food supplies, destroy homes, scatter families, contaminate water, imprison dissenters, inflict wounds, burns, kill the living. Elsewhere, it has been defined that mercy is the entrance into the chaos of another person's life willingly, to willingly enter into the chaos of another person's life. The works of mercy. Feed the hungry. Clothe the naked. Give drink to the thirsty. Visit the imprisoned. Care for the sick. Bury the dead. The Jethro Catholic Worker is a witness of this new creation. It is not a charity or philanthropic organization. It is a community of humans who seek to recover relationship, to live the works of mercy, and struggle in mutual recognition of this craft. There are people who at once disobey the moral power of death, and more than disobey are promoting a gospel obedience to this new creation. Every week, Jethro Catholic Worker hosts friends, many of whom experience the vicious condition of American poverty that we term homelessness, a place to share a meal at a table, a place to shower and receive a pair of clean clothes, a place to have community, a place to see, to know, and to believe that we know God through the breaking of bread, and we know each other through the breaking of bread, and we are not alone anymore. Mm-hmm. Which is to say, we know peace, we know mercy, we know compassion, through the breaking of bread, and we know each other through the breaking of bread, and we are not alone anymore. The Charity Booth Catholic Worker is over a 12th in Benton, and 10 years on, this day and 10 years more and 10 more after that. You can visit them Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday to join in that fellowship with the friends and with the community members there. You can also join them every second Saturday for a work, and also prayer a few days a week. There are newspapers available at the front. They record their goings-on. We could talk for days and rhapsodize about our friends from the Catholic Worker, but I'll close just with notes about awards and how they can be tricky. Dorothy Day, one of the co-founders of the Catholic Worker, resisted being called a saint because she did not want to be dismissed. So this award is not for you to be dismissed. This award and awards in this as a recognition, at once an affirmation and an encouragement to continued growth and instruction in the works of mercy. So I, on behalf of Peaceworks KC, commend your devotion to the works of mercy, and may you continue to grow in faith, hope, and love with humility and humor. And this we charge you with the Chris and Lynn Cheatham Community Peace Award, 2018. Jody and Eric.
A very brief word of thank you. Thank you. Of course, we feel very honored to receive this award, but I think even more than that, we feel very humbled to be in the room of folks who inspire us the most in our work and who really uphold our work in many ways through prayer, friendship, and just your presence in our life. You entered our chaos last week when we were in court, and I think that is just another expression of your solidarity with us, and also our solidarity with friends who experience the harshness of poverty on a daily basis. So I feel really honored and mostly humbled. Thank you so much.
Yeah, just echo all that Jody said, and I love being in this group. Just a lot of mentors in this room. A lot of people who have mentored us in the short time that we've been back to Kansas City. So really a lot of gratitude because I'm still learning stuff every day. I'm learning a ton from Michael Enriquez every day. I'm learning a ton from Henry Stover every day. Many people in this room have been amazing friends, so thank you very much. And it's great to have such wonderful allies. Thanks.
Oh. Thank you, Joseph, for your words. And thank you, Eric and Jody, for everything you all do. Thank you so much. We'll keep the awards running here, and we're going to have, we're going to present the Charles E. Bed Peace Merit Award, and we're going to bring up last year's winner to present Barbara McCracken. Let's give a round of applause for Barbara.
Thank you. I feel very honored to have the opportunity to present this award today. I have heard our winner today, Maurice Copeland, is going to receive this. And in fact, if he'd come up now, I'm going to let him do the talking. Thank you.
Maurice can do the talking, right? Jane knows what I'm talking about. Yeah, I want to, this is appreciated very much. And I know over the years that I have told you people how much I appreciate you. When we were out protesting, I knew some of you were going to go to jail. Y'all did not have to do that. I mean, why are these people really encompassing all of the subjects that we encompassed in this thing? If I could, look, this guy impressed me one day.
Eric,
we were protesting, and the powers walked a guy through our protests around like he was anybody. He could have been one of our friends or whatever. And he was carrying a gun. Do you remember that? This guy's a preacher, right? He's a minister. It was not going to happen. He wanted to know one thing. Why are you carrying that gun? Why? And he followed that man. I'm watching this. So I had to follow him, because I was scared for him. But he followed him all the way to his car. And one question. Why? I mean, what is the point? Well, that's the whole point of this whole thing. The nuclear weapons. Someone, please, help me before I leave this earth. Explain to me, why do we keep producing these things when we have had the capability of, we'll say, a third of things the way they are now, and in future years, total destruction? Why do we keep trying to improve on something that we've had the capability of doing for the last 30 years? How can you improve on instant destruction? The money that we put into these programs, the convincing facts that the government gives you for upping our technology for something that's already in place, instant and total destruction for the last 30 years. What do we want? Are we true to what we want? North Korea. We don't want them to have it. Not really. And they're the monsters now. Well, you just had the Russians to tell you what? About this big doomsday. Why haven't we said anything to them? What is this going on, people? Let's get sane about this stuff. And Solon Trump, peace works, all of you people, we have gotten somewhere in the last 36 years. Amen. You people I was taught to make you invisible at Bendix. Do not look at them. They warned us not to look at you. And most of all, do not associate with these people, or you will lose your job.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what we were told. I was told, I'm sorry, but I have to do this because I very seldom get this chance, but I will be having this chance in my campaign. I was told by, she may be your friend, she may be your friend, I don't know, but you need to know this, Claire McCaskill's people, that if I sever my association with PeaceWorks, that they could do more for the sick and dying workers at Honeywell. Mm-hmm. Think about that. Do you hear what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. If I sever my ties with PeaceWorks, that they, the United States government, could do more for the sick and dying workers at Bannister. Oh, okay. If I sever my ties.
Mm-hmm. You were there, and you were there that day.
There was more people there that day. We had a nice little meeting. It was told by Sakura Corey Springer. It don't come like that. It don't come like that. We're after the same thing, and we're going to get it.
Thank you, Maurice. Thank you, thank you. And I just want to say, we'll talk about upcoming events here right at the very end, but Maurice is going to be on a panel discussion for the Poor People's Campaign, speaking on these issues that he knows so much about, on March 26th at 6:30 at the Northeast Library. It's on your up-and-coming events, but I just want to put that out there, that including what Mike Enriquez has been talking about, as well as having Maurice there on the panel, is going to be a really valuable place to have local people speaking into these issues. Awesome. Thank you so much for that. Right now I'm going to have Scarlett come up. Scarlett does awesome work for our membership. She does such a great job going out and speaking at churches and programs and schools and different places like that. So we are so grateful for everything that Scarlett does for us. We're going to bring her up and have her talk about membership. Round of applause for Scarlett.
Hello. Thank you so much for being here today and all your support for PeaceWorks. On each table you have or had a little bowl of M&Ms. Have you ever wondered what M&M might stand for? Well, for PeaceWorks it stands for Membership Matters. In 2014, we had approximately 61 members. In 2015, we had 105 members. In 2016, we had 166 members. And today, we're slightly over the 200 mark. Woo! We continue to grow, but we would love to have M&M more members. So membership matters, and we need more members. We ask our members to proudly become ambassadors for PeaceWorks. You notice Ken here.
Oh, good.
Okay. If you're a member and you haven't received one of these, please come back in the foyer because I have a box full of them for you. The purpose of it was to share with others, as an ambassador for PeaceWorks, what we do. And Henry kind of summarized all that we're involved with, and we've heard our speakers today. So we want you to become an ambassador for PeaceWorks. Our membership is very affordable. We go from $5 on up to $1,000, and we do have a few $1,000 members, which is a lifetime membership. So please stop by again. If you haven't joined us and become a member, or you want to have more information about membership, we'd love to talk and visit with you. So remember, membership matters, and PeaceWorks always needs more members.
Don't go away.
Oh.
The program actually listed my name instead of Scarlett's. But the reason for that was Scarlett has decided that her life is too busy to continue being our membership coordinator.
So, not too busy for peace. Or that's right. Not too busy for the job.
Effective at the end of March, she is going to cease being that. And we want to recognize her great work. As you heard the numbers about numbers of members, I mean, it's been fabulous.
Yeah.
And as the treasurer, I can tell you that for sure. but we want to give her a little recognition as our membership coordinator. This plaque says from January 2015. That may be wrong. But at least about 3 years, right?
3 years, yes.
And on the plaque, I have put this, Let's Be Ambassadors for PeaceWorks KC. So,
nice.
Thank you so much.
Thank
you. All right. We're coming to the close of our program here, everybody. So thank you so much for your patience and for your presence here today. It's been really great. I'm going to have Bill Claus come up and then Lou Montanay just to give us some more briefing on the up-and-coming events. There's so much happening in Kansas City. It's such a wonderful hub to be a part of, to be a part of for social action and social justice movements. And none of that would be possible without you all. So if there's not people to show up to stuff, stuff stops happening. But there's lots of things coming up, which means people are coming. So I'm going to have Bill come up, and then Lou's going to follow him up with some more information about the events coming up around the area.
I don't know if they'll need a microphone, so I don't know how much coming up I'll do. But just very briefly, I want to let you know about a
talking
conference. I want to let you know about a conference that's coming up. It's called Kicking the Coke Habit, Building a Democracy for All. It's going to be August 10th and 11th at UMKC Student Union and also Unitarian Church. You've heard of that place. The co-sponsors are the KKFI Public Affairs Committee, Cross Currents of Culture, Friends of Community Media, All Souls, and UMKC Economic Club. Its aims are to identify and develop a common and deep understanding of the agenda of the small clique of super rich who are seizing all the institutions of power in the U.S. We have three keynote speakers, Jim Hightower, Jason Stanley, who's a professor at Yale, is an expert on how propaganda works. Nancy McLean, author of Democracy in Change, The Deep History of the Radical Right Stealth Plan for America. And I'm letting you folks know about it. I would like for PeaceWorks to help us promote this event, for you all folks to attend the conference, for us to set up literature tables and think about doing a workshop. This is all in the planning stages right now. August 10th and 11th, mark it on your calendar. Thank you very much for the time.
Thank you. Thank you. Stop. Okay. I'm going to divide you into two parts, right here and here. And you're going to say stop, and you're going to say gun violence. Okay? Stop.
Gun violence.
Stop.
Gun violence.
Stop!
Gun violence!
Good job. Okay, so I want to point out this sign up here, close the loopholes, gun show and internet. My husband said it looked like a beanbag toss, but anyway. Okay, target your vote against the NRA money takers. Okay, still divided into two, we're going to say, love your kids, and say this with an emphasis, love your kids. Not your guns, okay?
Love your kids, not your guns. Love your kids, not your guns. Love your kids, not your guns.
Okay, good job. Yeah. I'm not going to go through all the events we have coming up because they're all listed on that paper that you have. But there's a couple I really wanted to point out. I want to keep up the spirit that we have here for rallying against gun violence, and that's every Saturday from noon to 1 p.m. down at the plaza. But the following Saturday, the March 24th, Henry talked about this, March for Our Lives. So you want to come there, not to the plaza fountain, because if you go there, you'll see a dog show. So go over to Thies Park, Thies Park,
is that how you say it? Just across from the Nelson, just south of the Nelson Art Gallery. And remember the Poor People's Campaign after that at 3 o'clock. Okay, and then one I really wanted to point out to you, who knows what ICANN stands for?
International
Campaign to
Abolish Nuclear Weapons.
Okay, you win a prize. Here's some Ruth Bader Ginsburg breath mints. So just be glad I'm not tossing paper towels. Just okay. Anyway, the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons representatives, Dr. Matthew Bolton and Dr. Emily Welty, will speak on Saturday, April 28th from 2 o'clock to 3:30. And this, I think, is going to be a really important event. Matthew is local. He comes from here. Come and hear the inside story leading up to ICANN's winning of the Nobel Peace Prize. From their speeches at the United Nations, they live in New York, they teach at Pace University, they teach peace studies there. They're coming to talk to us about their speeches at the UN. They had an audience with the Pope. Matthew and Emily helped to lead the UN, pave the way to a nuke-free world. Learn why it's so important for our future, and Anne talked a lot about that. And they'll speak at the Community of Christ Stone Church, and this is also sponsored by PeaceWorks. At the corner of Lexington and River in Independence. So I hope you all come, and there's lots of parking. And then you all know the other events as listed there, and thinking of what Jim said, I say, hi-ho, silver.
Thank you so much, Lou, for the rally, the mini rally, and for letting us know about what's coming up. And this has been a great gathering. This is so awesome to fill this room year after year after year, and to, again, this year, seeing so many new faces. It's really wonderful to come together, and that's what it's going to take. And we've heard so much resonating through everyone's stories. Everything that was shared of movements that this has come from or is moving towards takes each other coming together. And now, some people come here with a big background in civil disobedience or peace works, or even at one time building parts for the weapons and now being against them, or sometimes working in different industries. My background has to do with dirt and soil and growing food in the city. So I'm going to speak from that as my final analogy here. And at Jerusalem Farm is a community that a couple of us here live in and we participate in. And there we have very intimate relationships with compost. And creating new life out of what is usually seen as old, dead matter that doesn't matter anymore. But what we come to recognize that all living things matter, and that all things can offer new life into even old systems. And so while the soil sitting in our backyard might be aged and has been there for thousands of years, long before we were here, we can still come to bring what so many people would cast out as old and dying and what would be waste. And we can still bring that back together to create new nutrients and new soil. But how compost works is it can't be done alone. In fact, I recently heard a new statistic that a single head of lettuce in a landfill in that process, which isn't proper for breaking down, can take up to 20 years to break down. Wow. 25. Thanks for the correction, Lee. We just heard it in a new documentary, Wasted. 25 years for it to really complete its action and its cycle of life into new life. But when things come together, and it's not just about having fresh things, so this is stuff that will go into our compost when we go home today, but it also, you have to combine it with the old. You have to combine it with what has already been present. You take fresh food, you mix it with some other dead matter like leaves and straw. But just like sourdough bread, you need a culture. You need a culture to pick from and to throw it in the pile. And that's really what gives you the roots to get started, the breaking down process. And the process that brings it all together to create the fuel. And so when we bring where we come from to where we are now to where we are going, that's what brings us to new life. And that's what will nourish our soil for the future to come. Thank you all so much for being that soil, whether it's from the past, here in the present,
are going to plant our new seeds in the future. Thanks for being here. We love you, and we'll see you again. Sure. The poor people's cards, we'll be collecting them up at the front, kind of near the desk where you checked in. We'll be collecting the cards right up there up front if you fill those out. That would be great. Thank you so much.